Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Podnuts Pro. I am your host, Marvin B., and yes, it has been a couple of weeks since I put out a show. As many of you know, I went through a plethora of releases back in September and needed a break, but it is time to come back. And ladies and gentlemen, the way that I'm coming back, you're going to enjoy. I happened to be in Tampa doing work this past Thursday and Friday, decided to drive home by way of Orlando and ran into a good friend of mine, Mr. Mike Smith, and he is with me now. Mike, how are you?
Hi, doing good. I'm so glad you were able to make it over and then stop by.
I tell you what, you got yourself a nice little setup here.
Yes. As a matter of fact, when we were planning the vacation for my wife and I, and in May, as everybody knows, broke my foot, and it still broke. We scheduled a getaway in October thinking, there's no way my foot's going to still be broke. Well, I sit here in a boot cast, but it's nicer than being in the Philadelphia area when you're in Orlando, and there's freeze warnings up north, and it's 90 degrees here. It is a much more pleasant way to suffer in this weather. So, so it was great. I'm so glad that Marv mentioned that he was going to be down here at the time that I'm here, and this just worked out great. And we got a nice big room here, so it was easy to. Marv says, I could bring my portable podcast gear. And I'm like, yes, let's do it.
Yep, we did a show. So just had a nice, lovely lunch. Had a couple of, those of you on the Twitter saw a couple of pictures I posted from the balcony of the resort that is here, the Lazy River Pool. We are, and just so that you have an idea of where we are on one of the Disney resort places.
Yep.
And
this is Bonnet Creek and Lake Buena Vista, Florida. So it's a nice place, and my wife and I like coming down here, when we can get away and get a chance, and we just it's nice. We're gonna like do Epcot, the food and wine festival. Anybody who knows what I look like, I'm an expert when it comes to the food. So I can't wait to go around, but I am now going to have to use the motorized vehicle, because there's no way I could walk even though I can walk on the boot cast, I can't do long stretches without my foot hurting. So I'm going to rent one of those motorized carts. I don't know what you call them,
scooter.
And that's how we're going to, do the world showcase. So,
And these are places where you really have to walk. Some parts. I mean, it is just simply, a place where even though a lot of things are close, they're not so close that you can enjoy them all. Some places you have to hike, you have to, take a, not a taxi. What am I thinking? An Uber or one of the services from the hotels to get, across the street or whatever.
Which is what I had to use last night. Even I was telling Mar for dinner. It's at the other end of the resort, and it's a long walk. And when I went to the front, they said, oh, we have free shuttle here. Hold on. Got the shuttle, came right over, took us right to the front door of where we were eating. I was like, that was nice. Yeah.
So speaking of resort, we have to at least let people know, this is not your traditional resort that people are used to, where they go to one building and you have a campus, maybe you've got a pool, and the resort is just that. This is a village of resorts.
Yes. There's, 6 pools. There's 8 towers of buildings, all with different eats and different amenities that you can share throughout the whole thing. There's a big man-made lake in the middle. Yep. There's like multiple pools that you can choose from. It's a really nice resort, and it's a resort where the rooms are made to where you can do full-blown dinners and breakfast, and there's a lot of room. It's a full kitchen, not a half kitchen.
This is bigger than most city apartments. Let's just say that.
And that's why we like that. That's what Wyndham and We try to do something every other year, mm-hmm. like with this, and as a getaway. And this is our vacation. Like the last time we took the grandkids down, and they just loved this, especially doing Disney. But we did that in September, and I'll never do it again. September, it was 100 degrees. Everybody thinks September in Florida.
Okay,
hey, it's not too bad.
Let's not get a little crazy. It's not crazy. The 100 degrees that gets you.
It's the humidity. It's humidity. We suffered so horrible last year, September. It was so bad that we like October, and it's starting to break. Like tomorrow, they're saying it's going to be like fall. They're going to see some 80s.
Right. But here's the tomorrow. Thing, though, too. You have to remember, you're in the middle of the state.
Yes.
So along the edges in, say, the great city of Fort Lauderdale, we've got the nice breeze coming off the ocean. So it's not as bad on the East Coast right now, even though the temperatures are hot. We've got that breeze. By the time a breeze gets to Orlando, it's gone.
It's gone.
So,
but we don't like the humidity. So that's why October, and it's kind of a coincidence that that's the Food and Wine Festival time at Epcot.
Oh, who'd have thought that? Right?
So it's perfect. But we didn't get a chance to explore that last year because the grandkids, that's not what they want to do.
Right.
You know, they were all about, you know, the Animal Kingdom world, whatever, the park. And then, of course, the Magic Kingdom.
Right.
And then it's Hollywood Studios, but let's call it what it really is. It's Star Wars Studios.
Well, now it will be, yes.
Yeah. And because it's all about Star Wars, and they just love that. They ate that up. You know, we, as grandparents, they so love us.
There you go.
Know?
Yeah.
So, no, it's great. And we enjoy that.
All right. So you're here enjoying yourself. I, on the other hand, was working.
Yes.
And had yet another night last night. I was on installation number 6 of 7 of my SD-WAN upgrade for one of my customers.
Explain that.
So SD-WAN is basically bringing in a dual WAN connection for your client, except that the SD-WAN allows for you to utilize the same IP address across both companies. So if you've got, for instance, and I'll just say my customer here has a Windstream fiber connection,
right?
And they're bringing in Comcast cable as the backup. Well, normally when you get those services,
you have two separate IPs, right?
Separate IPs. But in this case, one set of IPs for both connections.
How can it do that?
Well, it's done through the ISP. So it's not something that I can just do myself.
So you got to arrange that with them.
You've got to arrange that with the companies. So in this particular case, I actually let the ISP.
So they have to own their own IP that is separate from either ISP. Is that correct?
No.
They can use one of them?
Yeah, because they started with Windstream.
So they can keep that. And
Windstream is actually doing the deal with Comcast and getting the IPs to work.
Because I have clients that need that capability where they have Comcast, but we're waiting for Fios to Verizon Fios, but they have a Comcast static IP. And I don't want to change that. And I don't want to have to worry about that.
There are companies that are offering for technicians like us the ability to do that SD-WAN. So maybe I'll find somebody that has a list of those, because I myself haven't done that separate yet. All of the ones I've done have been through Windstream, and I've let Windstream take the lead. And the reason is because Windstream also has the voice.
Okay.
And I want to make sure that if my customers lose their data, that when it switches over to the backup, I could have brought in Comcast on my own and set it up as a secondary WAN, but they wouldn't have had the phone services automatically switch over and stay on the MPLS or VLAN for that.
Here's how I've gotten around that for one client that needed that. I used Netcarrier, and Netcarrier brought both ISPs
together.
And their managed router, they allow the cutover so we don't have to worry.
Okay, so it's very similar.
It's similar, but we're like kind of buying the whole service. It wasn't like do it yourself, which is a little bit what you're doing with the SD-WAN or no?
It's half and half because, like I said, Windstream is taking the lead in doing their MPLS with their voice. We actually break out the data were using Windstream for internet, but I managed the data through my SonicWall VPN connections.
Okay.
So that's one reason why this is a little trickier than most. In most scenarios, the ISP has everything.
Right.
And you just let them deal with it. In this case, they actually have to cater some special settings for my customer because we're doing data separate. And when we have to test the failover, one of the problems we've always had is when they break the first connection, the second connection doesn't always come up because they haven't configured the second data through our firewall to go through their system.
Now, last night, did you do tests for the failover?
Yes.
That's what you were really...
That's part of the checklist. It's one of the things that's funny because it takes us about an hour to do, well, maybe half an hour to do the data portion first.
Right.
And I basically bring in my stuff and do the test to make sure that the data came over. And sometimes there's an issue with DNS or where we can browse a little. My VPNs don't work. We got to configure that. Then we do the voice. And then we do our local long distance testing to make sure. And then they also have extension dialing between the offices that I have to test.
Oh, wow.
Then once all that's done, then I say, okay, now we test the failover, where we literally will pull the plug on the first connection. We're on a call.
Right.
While that test is going on. So when the plug is pulled, do I still stay on the call?
That's exactly what we tested with NetCarrier when we first implemented that. And that was been a couple of years. So that's why I needed the help. And having NetCarrier offer that as a service made it easy.
Right.
Since that was their voice, we're like, okay, look, we can bring, but they are the ones who bring the internet connection because of that. Like they don't, the client does not have a separate bill from Comcast, a separate bill from Verizon. It's one bill to NetCarrier.
And that's the best way to do it?
Yes. And you have one place to beat up if there's a problem.
Absolutely. You know? So we do that test and then we also test the fail back because one of the things we do is they've got pretty good fiber connections where they've either got 50 meg or 100 meg up and down.
Right.
Comcast.
Oh, well, you know, 20 up. That's it. Or whatever.
At most. Most of them are 110. So one of the things that I always have to fight with them is to make that fiber primary.
Yes.
Because they're so used to just having them both up and whichever one is, you know, doing good is what it'll select. I'm like, No. They have services that are either replicating data or doing what they have to have that upload.
That's what we're doing because the Fios fiber is 150 up and down. Mm-hmm. And the Comcast, since it's a backup, it's like the 7510 or whatever. You know, it's the least amount, you know, that of service they need. And we had to roll over because this is very interesting. I'll never forget the problem. Might have been about a year and a half ago. They couldn't get to certain websites, but the internet connection's up. So it never failed over. The problem was DNS in Verizon land that couldn't get them to certain sites that they needed to get to. And this is a financial planner.
Right.
You know, so we had to manually cut them over to Comcast until we could test and know that Verizon had the problem. And just something to keep in mind, everybody, the president of this company, very frugal, took my bills for that extra time that was needed to work on this and all that and submitted that to Verizon because it took over a week for Verizon to solve this. Verizon compensated them with my bills and everything. And they pushed and pushed hard because it was their fault. It was their problem. This is a business account with SLAs. And so keep that in mind if you ever have a prolonged problem or an outage, have that business and maybe you guide the owner or whatever to communicate them. It doesn't hurt to ask and push because you may get something back. But anyway, it was very interesting. But of course, the minute we knew it was working, we flipped them back because they had the better connection.
Right.
So that's really good. Now, is that becoming more commonplace now with your bigger clients and that need that failover?
It's not yet, but it will. It will because what's funny is, especially here in Florida, the way that the fibers and they're actually shared connections a lot of times. So I've had situations where a law firm has been down because another carrier cut a fiber line a mile down the road or whatever. Wow. And so we do need those failovers. And, you know, the law firms, the financial firms, the, you know, everybody is becoming so dependent on the internet.
Cloud. Right.
And with their phones being in the internet.
Yep.
Because of voice over IP. And then, if you know, they want that uptime. So the only way to provide it is to give them something like an SD-WAN or multi-carriers coming into the business. And if one go down, the other one keeps going.
And that is what kept me, I'll say in the old days, slow to adapt to voice over IP. It's because it's the internet was still not, you know, you had the Comcast with multiple outages. There was no Verizon fiber. There was, and the internet connections were not reliable enough that I, as a tech, would recommend VoIP. Now, I mean, it's gotten better.
Right. Because back in the day, it was DSL.
Right.
And that was the, you know, fast, because it was faster than T1. Or
traditional T1, right?
Right.
You know, it was.
But here's the thing, though. Have you noticed that a lot of companies, you can't get analog lines half the time?
That's right. Yes, that is correct.
It's almost like the government has just let them do whatever. It's just like cable TV.
Right.
You know, everybody has to be digital by whatever date that is.
Right. And Verizon will rip out the copper. They won't connect to the premises copper anymore. Now, that's what I have in my house. Mm-hmm. It's copper throughout the house, and then it converts as the fiber came into the garage,
right,
and then it just patches in. They won't do that anymore. Mm. You know, Verizon, when they're doing the installs, at least in the Philadelphia area. And there's companies that I actually got business because Verizon called the company and said, your analog, your all your phones are, you're going to be going over fiber.
Right.
Now, prepare. This is the deadline. And so he was like, oh my God, what am I going to do? And the cable guy is my friend, and so, which is his cable guy, and I've never met him. This is an auto repair shop that also has a car wash attached,
right,
which that was an interesting challenge, connecting up the car washes so that you could take the credit cards, still be PCI compliant, and get rid of the analog, because now we're going over an internet that had to be secure.
Yep.
So I had to throw another router in, another static IP, and so he needed someone to come in and help manage that network changeover. And that's what I did. And I actually got some business because of Verizon sending that email saying, hey, your phones and this stuff is all changing.
Yep.
And that forces, you know, the forces to work, and they can't handle that themselves.
It is amazing the work we are going to get,
right,
because of those types of changes. Because,
yes,
you know what? Voice over IP connects to your network.
That's right. I mean, we become phone guys when I've so desperately tried not to. It was an area I never wanted to be. That's not what I do. I don't like phone systems. I like pushing that off, but they've now crossed the network line. It's all, you know, the networking.
Here's what I used to do with that. And I always would make them bring in their separate box.
Right.
And yes, you could use the physical cabling, whatever, but everything had to be separate.
Mm-hmm.
But now I'm at the point where I don't even want them in unless I manage it.
Exactly.
So I'm going to be actually, what's funny is I just called a company the other day to say, okay, let's talk about me becoming a partner, because I need to actually go ahead and sell voice over IP as part of my package.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to fight with 8x8 anymore. I don't want to fight with Comcast anymore. I don't want to fight with all of these companies. You know what? If I'm going to fight, I'll fight with me and my partner.
Right.
So.
And that's what I need. I don't have the relationship with a VoIP vendor yet. Like, I still have some net carriers out there. I have Ring Centrals. I have 8x8. I don't have that trusted, reliable VoIP partner that I come in with that I say, okay, this is it. So I usually help my client select, when they want to, that phone carrier. And I use myself as the consultant to guide them through,
right,
the contracts and the different, you know. Here's something that still bothers me. And I can't believe in 2018 that I have to say that this is a problem. Why do VoIP vendors continue to push 100 meg switches in the handsets? I don't understand. I don't get it. It's something I always have to change on every proposal that I get to be brought in on. And I say, we got to push back. We don't want the 410. We want the 411 or whatever, you know, that next model that gives you gig switches.
Yes.
And I explained to them, I said, you have a 300 meg internet connection. Well, we're going to downgrade you to 100 meg if you buy that handset. You know?
It is amazing because either, and I don't know how this is possible, but either there is still a huge segment of the country that can operate in 100 meg on their networks. I don't get it because I just took out, I made a customer buy new phones.
Yes.
Because when they brought me in to look at their network and I was analyzing stuff, I'm like, why is your network so slow? It's the phones.
Well, here, why am I? Yes. And I'm still seeing little switches put everywhere that are 10-100. Mm-hmm. I haven't even seen one that was 10 only. I mean, but 10-100, they shouldn't even be manufacturing them. I'll go on my little rant. Mechanical hard drives. Why? Why? Unless they're in NAS, unless I still don't understand the push for mechanical hard drives. Companies still sell 5,400 RPM mechanical drives.
Well, that's my thing.
I don't get it.
Mechanical drives, I'm not as worried about because I think that, you know, you can get enough CPU and memory and what some people do, what some customers do, they don't need that speed.
Yeah.
But 5,400,
they don't think they need it.
5,400 is, okay, shame on you for even still considering making those.
Right.
Those should be gone.
And here's where people get confused. He says, but I bought that. It says fast Ethernet. I thought that was the fast. No. No, it's not.
That's marketing. Exactly. It works. It's fast.
It was fast one day a long time ago, you know.
But it still says fast on the box.
They're still pushing them, and I'm ready for 10 gig, you know. And here, you know, I'm trying to get everybody to just at least once we start, I start replacing those 10-100s, we get gig, we replace the handsets. Wow. Things start performing better, you know, on the network.
But like I said, there has to be a large segment somewhere. And I just don't know where, because I'm not seeing them in my clients.
Yeah,
you're not seeing them in yours.
Exactly.
But somewhere there's got to be 100 just chugging along, doing its thing.
As a matter of fact, my son, as we were cleaning up an area, he started saying, look at the space you're taking. Why are you saving this? I'm throwing them out. And there was 10-100s. And I'm like, you're absolutely right. Get rid of them. There's no, I don't even want them around. Because if you don't look hard enough, you could grab it and think that there's, you know, it's gig. Right. I don't even want, and that they're so cheap. Gig switches are cheap. Now, if you want managed switches or PoE, that's a different story. And I get that. And you want to put, you know, you want to make the investment properly on when you need that equipment. But a lot of my smaller mom and pop shops and little clients, they, you know, a nice unmanaged 10-100, 1,000 switch for their backbone is fine. You know?
I'm sorry. That is true, but I can't for my clients.
Right.
I'm making
but your clients are too big on some.
Well, all of them. Not all of them are big.
Okay.
I mean, I'm going to be moving. Here's.
I mean, a grocery store that has three connections.
Okay, well, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
so one of my oldest clients, and I think at this point in time, they are my one of my originals from the 1990s, down to one attorney, one secretary.
Okay.
But they still have a server.
Wow.
I'm going to be moving them. And even them, they are getting, when we move them, they don't need a new server, but we are getting them a new managed switch and upgrading all of their, we are actually, those were going to upgrade their desktops. Their desktops are about 5 years old.
Right. Which they're is right
getting,
there.
They're getting SSD drives.
Yes.
I mean, solid state drives. Somebody, I was listening to a show the other day and somebody said SSD drives. They're like, that's redundant. So solid state drives, we're adding RAM, but they're staying on Windows 7. until the middle of 2019. Right. Then we're going to upgrade them to Windows 10.
Why the managed switch still?
Here's what I'm at.
Yeah, especially for a two. I mean, that's in my ballpark where I would, you know, they don't need a managed switch for that. That's an expense they don't need.
They don't, but in my, what I'm doing with all of my customers, and I don't care how big, how small you are, as much as I can standardize, I'm doing it. And if that means that the small people also get the big people stuff, which is like a managed switch, they are getting, they're getting a Ruckus access point.
Okay.
Overkill for them.
Right.
But there are so many tools and apps that I have that if there's ever, there is ever a problem, I just walk in, I turn on, whether it's my Fluke or it's my apps, and I can manage all that stuff so much faster, so much easier.
Okay.
And it's just something where I don't even want to try to figure out, okay, what do I have in that place and why are they... I just want to be able to walk into every single network, plug my stuff in, and see everything.
I still allow, and maybe this is because the I want the business. I still allow some clients to bully me down on budget against my standards, let's say, that I've always sworn I would never back down. Now, there are some things I won't back down on. Right. That's just a no-go, and I walk away, you know, just because no, and I, you know, good luck, I can't, you know, I can't be part of this. But I will allow them to push back on budget for items that, you know, so no managed switch, no, you know, they can't get my standard where I standardize, but maybe on a, like the HP Pro Curve I want, you know, so it's managed and it does, you know, it's a little, you know, they'll never have VLANs, but I can do it, you know, and that the, I will allow that just to get the work because I want the labor consulting dollars that is not going to be minimized or changed. So I may give in on hardware budget, but there's some standards I won't. I will not deliver a desktop with a mechanical drive.
And that's fine.
I won't do it.
Yeah.
I won't do it. It's going to be a solid state drive. Even if we buy the mechanical and then I clone it and swap it out or do something, you know, and then they're buying the expense and time for me to do that. And sometimes that's still cheaper than buying a solid state drive within the new hardware, which I'll still never understand the gouging of that. If, you know, just because you want solid state drive and there's like ridiculous prices, I could do it myself for them, save the money.
Right.
I still make money and they're going to have the better performance. And we've just done this for some clients.
I'm sure there's a reason for that. And I don't even care.
And that's the Dell world, you know.
Well, HP does the same thing. Yeah. If you go out and look for, there's very few HP desktops with solid state in them. But I do the same thing. I just, my law firm, we just finally, I got them to agree. Every new computer is coming with a solid state drive.
Yes. That, yes.
Now, what's funny is they immediately, well, can we get bigger monitors too?
Okay.
So
sure.
I'm like, yeah, fine.
Yeah.
So I'm now selling them. I mean, it, that customer, it is hilarious. I mean, not hilarious, but every new workstation setup for them is $1,700 after I add in, you know, when we, cause I'm not doing the regular base desktop anymore. I'm doing the pro desk. We're doing the solid state drive and they're doing double monitors.
Right. So everybody wants dual now. And by the way, I'm seeing three. I'm seeing three, which is just blowing my mind.
So
how much RAM do you put standard? Is it 16? I'm still eight. Okay.
Unless it is like a management person or an owner.
Right.
Then I'll go to 16. But with the solid state drives, I'm still doing eight.
Right.
With a 500 gig drive. I know that some people are still doing 256.
Yeah, 256 is fine.
I'm doing 500 because for the law firms, they are still doing so much with large documents. Their secretaries and staff are the ones that will have to get large case files where they're getting hundreds of gigs.
So they're still saving locally.
They're still
saving. So how are you backing that up? Or is it being transferred
to
the cloud or server?
No. if what they're doing is they're getting in case files and they'll do stuff locally,
right?
Because they have to manipulate PDF documents,
right?
They have to do transcription, that's local. They have to do a bunch of stuff, and then once they're done, they move that up to the server.
Manually, they got to know to copy that up to the server.
Because
I have law firms that do that too.
Because they have case management.
They got to live on the safe, right? They have case management software that they have to.
So then that goes up to the server, and the server is what's backed up.
So you're not backing up desktops to the server.
Only key workstations.
Okay.
Like accounting stations.
Yes.
If they've got local, accounting software. Again, management stations. Right. So key personnel will be backed up to the cloud. Everybody else has to go to the server.
Right.
And then the server, we do the data. So we have both the local and the cloud for there.
Okay.
And if somebody, has a workstation that dies and they didn't move their stuff to the server,
shame on them.
Shame on them.
Okay. And I've been there and that's been ugly.
And what's funny is I don't have to be the one that gets yelled at.
Right.
The owners yell at them.
So the owner completely understands the model that's working there. So they know, management understands. And that's something I make sure that communication, that desktops are not being backed up. Now I have a client that's a lighting company that said, I don't want to have to worry about that. There's only 5 people. I want them all backed up to the cloud every night. Okay. So I put the software on that,
That's fine.
And they still have a shared Synology, that they really encourage everybody to put there, but they know the discipline is not there and they don't want to have a problem.
Right.
But they've made that cost, saying, hey, that's what it's, they made that cost decision,
So when it's 5-10 people or 10 people, not such a big deal.
Right. But when it's
180,
yeah, it's a big deal.
that becomes a management nightmare. So that's, but again, management's on top of that. Now, I was going to make a comment that we have to remember, a lot of people think that the Windows, shadow copy.
Right.
Is the backup. I have to explain to them, no, it's not.
That's like the conversations I used to have where people would think RAID was a backup.
Yes.
No, it's for fault tolerance and it's not a backup, and that was always a discussion I would have to have. They thought, oh, I got a RAID. I got mirrored disks in my workstation. I don't have to worry about a backup. No, you do have to worry. So this week I have a client that is, he moved down to South Carolina, and I have not touched, talked with him in a long time. And he has a Synology. And before he moved, one of the drives was bad.
Okay.
But he didn't get the money to budget. He said, I can't afford. I said, you are at risk. All of your designs, all of your stuff, small shop, just single man, Right. I said, you are at risk because if you lose another drive, you're done. You're done.
Not doing backup to the cloud?
No. Because budget. So guess what happened this week?
Really?
Drive 2, gone. So now he's I can't help him, I said, I can't help you. I give him advice and I told him what to do. I said, and he's like, I know, Mike, you're right. You warned me. And I was like, and this is the lesson that we got to, I did everything I could do.
Right.
If he's not going to purchase another drive, put it in there and let it rebuild. And I could have done that before he moved. And he didn't want to do that. I'm like, okay. So now he's working directly with Synology. They got to recover his data from 2 of the drives. And then he's going to move it to Dropbox Pro, I think his last email was. So we can only do what we can do and build the give them all the information and all of the options and all of the costs and do all of the warnings. I thought my job, you might like this, in the corporate world as a network manager, I looked at my job as that I'm holding the client at the cliff. Look, and I'm holding them back, but showing them how far the drop is, but I don't let them fall.
Right.
But I have to show them that in order to get my budget, you know? So I do everything I could creatively, you know, to keep things going, keep things moving, but I had to let them know. And I always took advantage of opportunities to make my case to get a budget. Like when something happened and I saved them, I said, this could have been a lot worse. We can ease the suffering and pain if I can have money for this.
Yeah, but you know what the problem today is? You actually have to let some of them fall off right. that cliff because yes. they're going to look at it and go, yeah, I can survive that.
Right, right. Probably go break a leg or something, you know, yeah.
And the yes. worst part is some of them fall and they do survive.
Right.
And they're like, but, oh, okay, I'm good.
Right.
I can live with that. And it's the same mentality. I don't know what a better analogy here in Florida is.
Oh,
hurricanes.
Hurricanes. Oh, my gosh.
When people think that just because a hurricane, you know, I've been through a category one, I'm good. Mm. Okay. Just because you've been through it doesn't mean this one is
not
going to
come by.
Right. And it's not even that. It's there are so many factors in where you are in the yep. storm. Where does the storm come up? What happens? Where's the squall? There are so many factors that a one could do much more damage to you than somebody a mile away in a four.
I would think this is so new, unique, you being in Florida, that I'm going to guess, and I've never had that all of your clients understand disaster recovery and understand and are in a position because it's been so varied over the last couple of years, attacking all parts of this state.
This is, yes, I am now in a situation where anytime there is a mention of a hurricane, my customers are already expecting me to put out an email. Here's the plan.
Right.
Here's where the storm is expected. I mean, they literally will wait for me to start saying, okay, what do we need to do? And yes, they are all in a situation, except for maybe one or two that right. are not. And here's the thing. The difference is all of the customers that I have under management, and what I mean by under management is, even though I don't call myself an MSP, I provide managed services. Right. And anybody that is on a service contract, a retainer, whatever agreement, they're on some sort of backup recovery that is either completely cloud-based or a combination of local and cloud.
I would agree with you on that with my clients, yes.
And I just tell them, if you're going to be my client and you're going to be in Florida, this is what we're doing.
Right. And so. I would just say, it's harder to sell up north because they haven't tasted the disasters that have happened here
right.
in Florida. So I have a harder sell on backup. So what I have to do is leverage like Hurricane Sandy and things like that, which did put them no power, no access to the building for 5, 6, 7 days. That was a big lesson to my area to clients yeah. that then said, Mike, we now understand we need VoIP for phone. We need this. We got to get off the local server. We got to right. get, you know, it made them embrace cloud. And then this one client in particular is where the dual WAN connection, you okay. know, coming in, because they learned when they couldn't access their server during Sandy for all those days, where I had to get access to their building, take their physical server, bring it to my house on my generator and gave them access to it, or they wouldn't have been able to do it. And right. that, and they were just lucky I lived around the corner and had a generator up and running. They were very, very lucky. So,
yeah, there are so many things now. And you know, it was funny because we just got finished talking about Hurricane Michael.
Right.
That came through the panhandle.
Did you have clients impacted by that?
What's funny is,
because they're kind of up on the coast.
I had the client in Tallahassee.
Okay.
Nothing major there. And then App River is actually based to the west of where Michael came in Gulf Breeze. And so it came in between them. Now App River had a little bit of deal with, but they're okay. But it's the funny thing with how quickly Michael developed.
Yes.
And how strong it got in such a short time. you know, I was going to make a comment to you earlier that you have people now that are like, Mike, we understand, and you've got to jump on that now while it's fresh in their mind, because right. every year that passes for you, you're going to lose that opportunity.
Right.
Down here, we're reminded every single year.
Yep.
So I don't have to fight right. that
And
battle.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I would, that, and that was my point. You should never have a problem of a client resisting your recommendations to protect their data. Right. I still have that battle because they feel like they're safe. You know, we're up north. We don't have these big bad, you know, but they have made it up there, you know, yeah. and have, you know, really did. It's the ice storms we get too that don't get the publicity of a named hurricane, you know, that those ice storms bring down power lines and no yeah. power. And if you're not cloud-based and can't get to your office, well, how are you getting to your data? You know, if it's not synced somewheres or backed up somewheres where you can get access to
right.
it. You know, for even the smaller clients, they got a problem.
Well, that's going to be the push for us now, is not just disaster and recovery, it's continuity.
Yes, business continuity is
and
important.
And that is,
you should know, be a plan.
It should be. But you know how hard it is? And yes. the problem is the cost.
Yes. You and know. It could be as simple as business continuity. And I had this conversation with a client that elected to go, okay, the next round of machines is going to be laptops with docking stations. So this way, their business continuity plan is everything's cloud-based. The user will have their laptop at home. There you go. You know, I mean, that is as simple as that, that they now that person can connect, because it's like, okay, I'm not in the office. I can still connect to everything. In the cloud, you know, we have VoIP, you know, we have their business continuity plan is the office blows up. But hey, we're still in business.
Right.
You know, and because all the people can still operate.
And for companies that can do that, where your applications can live in the cloud.
Yes.
It's going to be great.
But
I still have a lot of people that. And what's funny yeah. is there may be portions that can be in the cloud,
right.
but not all of it.
And I have clients with that too, especially attorneys.
Yeah, attorneys are one of these where, I mean, I've got this one customer. I mean, I'm dealing with two problems with them. One, they're multi-site.
Right.
So multi-site for them means that their main database is replicated between two of the six offices.
Okay.
So the four branch offices can have just about anything happen and they can't work, period. They can't remote. They have to remote into one of the two offices. I have an East Coast, West Coast scenario. So if a storm comes on the East Coast, it takes out everybody. If it right. comes on the West Coast, it just takes out part of them. So they're trying to figure out, okay, how do we deal with that East Coast, West Coast, or if the branch offices are down or if the main site goes down? They don't want to be dependent on a data center.
Right.
Because they want control of their data. They can't go to the cloud because their case management system doesn't work in the cloud. They've got to have servers. And it is not cheap, the servers we have to build for them. The SQL servers we built for them 2 years ago, $50,000 each.
As I think, try to solve this, and you probably looking at this, you got to host the servers. So, and then now you got to worry about them, like a rack space and what's their disaster recovery and what they're trying
to figure out, okay, how can we fortify the main office? Because again, they don't want to move their servers to a data center. They don't want
to
host.
They have to.
They don't want to host their servers in the cloud.
Right.
So they're like, how can we fortify our main office with, you know, protection from, you know, outages? How do we get a generator attached to our building that we can stay up and running?
You need to be part of like a SunGard facility or something that is already fortified.
Trying to figure something out.
You know, that I'm just thinking like off the top of my head how I would approach that. You know, I would probably try to convince, I guess there's no way they're going to allow that server to be hosted, even no matter how secure it is.
Well, I don't know. I mean, that's what we're dealing with. But right now they're thinking, They bring in a big enough generator to run their building.
Yeah, but what about the building itself?
Their building is rated up to, I forget what, 150 miles an hour.
What about
They're already replicating data.
They're replicating to like a SunGuard facility?
No, they're replicating between the East and West offices. If the West Coast gets hit, they still have all their data in the East Coast.
If the East Coast gets hit, they still have it in the West. Okay, that works.
Now, what I'm trying to let them know is, what if a storm comes sideways? And because I have to think about that. A storm can come and go right through West Palm and on a path through Tampa.
You're talking the west and east coast of Florida?
Yes.
Oh, no. I was thinking California.
No.
No.
You have to remember, Florida people have to think of coastal in a different way.
No, could wipe out all of them. Yes. No. See, when you said west coast, I really thought California. No. And I was like, hey, that's pretty cool. That's a good...
East Coast Florida and West Coast Florida are two different worlds.
And we've seen them hit both?
Yeah.
No. Okay, now I understand.
Just last year, we had a storm that covered the entire state.
Right.
So that's what we deal with.
So now I get it. See, isn't that funny how you look at West Coast? See, when you say West Coast, being a non-Floridian, that's California.
Yeah, you're thinking of California, Oregon, Washington.
Right.
No, here it's that's West funny. Coast is Sarasota, Tampa. You mean I got to get in the car and drive? I got to plan for a change of gas.
Yes, I could see where their concern is and where your challenge is. Mm-hmm. Well, that's why, and that should be your argument.
Listen, I can't protect the whole state.
We can't protect the state of Florida. So we got to be out of the state of Florida where we're replicating our data to. Mm-hmm. So you might just need a secure place somewhere as far away that you're replicating to.
So my other law firm, when we removed them into the data center, it was easy because first of all, we got them over the hurdle of going into a data center. And that data center would then replicate to another data center up north. I think it was either Ohio or Chicago or something like that. And worst case scenario, we would have to reapply IP addresses for them to get to the stuff in the other data center. Right. But they had a data center that was actually local to them, like I think a couple of miles, still in Fort Lauderdale, that was hurricane rated so that if a hurricane came, that building would still be up. People would just remote into that building outside of their office and be okay. But I had to explain to them, just because that building is a data center, what happens if they go down?
Right.
And it was something where at least the data is being replicated out of state. But that's the battle that, because remember, we're talking at that time, that law firm was, they were 185 people moving up to 200 fast. So it's that data storage cost per user cost. It adds up.
It does. We did a replication in the corporate world where the last company I was with, they were in Pennsylvania, but we had a data center from an acquisition in Ohio, right outside Cleveland, Ohio, and set up replication to there. So at least it's out of the state, but still you're up north, yet Ohio's had the same kind of storms that, you can hit Pennsylvania, it's not. To me, it still wasn't far enough away, for the disasters that we're presented with.
Right.
So
in our scenarios, we need to think East Coast, West Coast of the U.S.
Yes.
And get a data center out in Colorado or somewhere other than our state here. So, all right. Well,
wow. Isn't that funny?
Coming up on 50 minutes.
And this was just you saying what you worked on last night, which didn't even finish. I think to a great topic of, business continuity, disaster recovery, backup, these are the discussions we're having on a daily basis. And it's really tough with small clients to get them if they've never tasted losing data or some clients still have trouble even saying, I don't want to pay for a cloud backup. I don't trust my data out there. You got it on a local backup. I said, yeah, but that doesn't prevent from a fire in the building.
No.
I, And not you.
Technical difficulties. Technical
difficulty. Drop the mic there. But it's not. I said, it's not that we're worried about you. I'm worried about your neighbor down the hall that we can't trust. You know, that could cause a fire or have a problem.
Right. If you're in a shared space.
You're in a shared space. Forget it. You know, this is a, you got to get data to the cloud. And that's still, I still have problems with those discussions back up at all. Well, even for a single individual, how do I still have that problem? I don't get it until they come crying that it crashed. And now you're at the mercy of, you know, well, have you lived a good life? Do you pray regularly? Do you got to get lucky here for, you know, if I'm going to get your data back. And sometimes they're lucky, sometimes they're not. You know,
your backup is, I mean,
it's so critical.
So here's the deal. So as part of last night's stuff, mm-hmm. this wasn't the only thing I did. I also upgraded their data appliance.
Okay.
So we went from a 6 terabyte storage unit to a 12 terabyte storage unit.
Okay.
This is a customer who, just to give you an idea, when I first met with them, they literally told me, and at this point in time, they had only 2 offices and they were about 70 people. They said, we're never going to spend more than $40,000 on IT. And I said, then we're probably not going to work together at all. So here we are. First of all, it's 9 years later. They now have 6 offices, soon to open 7.
Right.
They're going to be coming up on, I think they're at 180 users now. So they not only are spending much more than $40,000,
a lot more.
But they didn't want to spend money on backup either.
Oh.
They are now going to be spending $1,000 a month at 2 locations. So they're spending $2,000 a month on backup.
Of course.
And you know how that started? They lost some files.
Yes.
That they needed to submit to court.
Unfortunately, that's what it takes. And it's amazing what...
It wasn't a crash.
Right.
It wasn't a server dying.
Nope.
It was somebody either deleted or misplaced files that they could not find.
Right.
And I said, I told you we needed a backup. Mm. And it still took a little while to get past just the internal shadow copy or whatever, because shadow copy only lasts for a few days, maybe a few weeks if you're lucky. And if you're doing, they started off with, it wasn't Carbonite, it was Mozy.
Okay.
And they started out with Mozy, and Mozy was only 90 days. And they're like, we need longer backup. And that's how I got them over to Datto, where I can say, look, I can give you 1 year in the cloud retention.
Right.
And they said, okay. And that's where we're at now. And we're, you know, and they, you know, they wanted to spend, what was Mozy, like $79 a year.
Right.
When it first came out.
Yeah,
that
exactly.
That was all they could do. And they were like, oh, that's fine. And no, $1,000 per month per location for their backups.
That's what it takes.
Yep.
And that's where, you know, I will seize those opportunities to make my case like you did. And that, and
I didn't have to make it. A judge made it for me.
That's true. See, that's another thing where I remember this. I remember this conversation. And this is from the corporate world. Working for a $3 billion company. In terms of retention of email, for when you're looking at e-discovery on any kind of a lawsuit, what is reasonable for a company of that size is going to be put to the test in a court of law.
Absolutely.
And I brought that up because it was funny. Sitting across from me was an attorney, and he says, I happen to read it somewhere. So I didn't say that, you know, that this is, you know, and he says, well, you make a good attorney, Mike. You know, he says, that's exactly right. But my CIO happened to be sitting there saying, you know, it's why we need more money to have better retention so we don't run into this situation. And it was, I remember reading that to give me the ammunition to get budgets for things for, you know, I forget where I read that, but it was, you know, that was being happened and that was happening. And that test will be applied. You know, are you, and it, this was another one for a company of that size, are we doing enough web filtering to protect the employees?
Oh, Mike, you just opened up a whole nother can of worms.
I know. And that was another one that got me, I forget the WebSense or whatever I think I
WebSense
had.
Is one, yes.
That was a big one that we were paying a lot of money for blocking everything. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was great, you know. Anyway, you're right. That's a whole, we gotta table that and talk about Untangle and all the other, you know, web filtering. That's what my go-to's been Untangle lately, you know, in doing the web filtering, because it's so easy to just, you know, create those rules and standards and just block it all, you know.
Yeah.
But that test at a certain level is going to be applied to a business that is of that value. So you gotta be you can't cheapen out if you're a company that size, and that's, and the chances of lawsuits by not having a WebSense in place, or the chances of, you know, an EDIS losing a big case because you didn't have the backup and retention policy that you should for a company your size.
So we're not going to be able to get into this discussion.
Yeah.
Folks, Mike and I have talked about everything except the things that we thought we were going to
talk about tonight.
We made a list.
We'll have to do another show sometime.
But the fact that you mentioned, you know, losing a case.
Yes.
I'm just going to throw this out there and we can come back to it at some point. So a law firm just approached me because they received a list of security assessments that they need to do in terms of, and it's not even, you know, it's not a HIPAA compliance, it's not a FINRA, but it's their customer
is requiring,
for them as best practices, all of the things that we typically will tell them about: password policies, encryption, data protection, backup. I've talked to them in the past about this and they're okay. Now I've gotten them to do all my other stuff. You know, so they have stuff in place. But out of all of that, the fear that got them
losing a client,
losing cases.
Right.
We are going to pull all 100 and whatever cases if you cannot produce written policies within 30 days.
That is awesome.
All of a sudden, I have a whole new scope of work.
Which, and we're not going to talk about it now, but we see, it's funny, Marv and I, what are we going to talk about? And we never got to it. And it's, what am I going to be doing for work this week while I'm on vacation? And I have to write an employee cybersecurity training guide for my biggest client that the board of directors now, because of a presentation I made, they want the employees to all be trained. And I have a lot of thoughts. I'll leave that. You know what? Whenever you're going to post this, I may continue that topic on the Mike Tech Show next week.
Well, here's
as I feed everybody. So hopefully you get this posted up soon.
This will be posted. We are recording on Saturday. This will be This will be posted Monday.
Oh, okay, that's perfect.
All right.
So as you're listening to this and you're a Mike Tech Show listener, you may hear a continuation of the cybersecurity work that I've been doing, and here you're going to love this. So my phone rings on Friday and it's a number I don't recognize why I'm here yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And I answer it and I was like, I'm here in the room. I'm like, I answer and it's a client. They had their own IT.
Right.
I don't know what happened. So we're going to have to. So I did a security assessment over a year ago and it's a CPA firm. And he called me, he says, we'd like you back and we'd like to talk about some other things.
Oh.
And so I was like, I already have my meeting, I've already scheduled my visit.
Okay.
You know?
There you go.
But it says, but it started on cybersecurity, you know, and a security assessment. So what I'm going to dangle is there's a lot of money out there on the street and on the table that's in front of you that with some simple structure of common sense and procedures and things that we're already doing, so you can bend down and pick that money up.
Yes.
So that's something that I,
So all you have to do is say to your customer, have you ever been asked to fill out a security assessment for a client?
And yes.
That is going to open the door.
It's going to open the door.
Because all the stuff.
And I'm seeing it right now. And it just so happens October is Cybersecurity Awareness Month.
Yes, it is.
So, all right. I think that's a good way to wrap.
Why don't we do that? So, folks, I want to say thank you. Mike, thank you very much for allowing me to stop in on my way home.
Thank you for bringing all this equipment and setting it up here. This is great.
Actually, what's funny is when I went to the customer, I had everything shipped there. I had a bunch of battery backups. I had all the stuff there. And I actually had to bring stuff back. And my trunk is full. And so I had to make sure I squeezed this in the back seat to make sure it didn't get crunched by stuff. So, I brought that. And because we didn't know what we were doing. It was just something where I was working. I didn't know how late I would work and didn't realize how beautiful a day it would be.
I know. It's actually hot out there today. Yeah, so.
It is. It's Florida. It's October.
So my wife is at, where's she at? Blizzard Beach, having fun today while you and I are working.
Nice.
So she's having fun on the tubes. And I see, as we're old now, and I'm like,
for yourself.
Please don't get hurt. And I was like, man, I so want to enjoy Epcot tomorrow.
Well, you know what? If she hobbles around like you, you'd be a matching pair.
Yeah, I know.
You have to have matching shirts and matching boots.
Matching boots.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, so thank you very much for listening to the show. And both Mike and I thank you for listening to both of our podcasts.
Yes.
Mike has done this a very, very long time. I'm a newbie to this, but...
You're more than a newbie now.
We appreciate you guys listening to us and allowing us to share simply what's happened in our week, you know, from time to time. And it's been a fun one.
Yeah, so thank you.
All right, ladies and gentlemen... Have a good night, and until next time, holla.